We're about to begin lesson number 13 of Mishnayos Maseches Trumos. We will be studying Perek Gimel, Mishneh Ches and Tes, the third Perek, the eighth and ninth Mishnah, with which we will finish the third Perek of Terumos. Now we've been learning that the person has various responsibilities, the farmer. Besides giving bikurim when the fruits are still on the tree, he has to give truma, he has to give maaser. Now suppose a person misspeaks, and instead of saying, I'm setting aside these two bushels as truma, he says the word maaser. Or instead of saying, I'm giving this one-tenth as ma'aser, he says, I'm giving it as truma. Mistakenly, slip of the tongue. It's interesting because throughout these lessons, occasionally I find myself with my tongue slipping. And I apologize for that, but sometimes in the midst of something, you just misspeak. Just the last session, I may have misspoken a few times and said truma when I should have said bikurim. As often I say truma when I should say tevua, and tevua when I should say truma. Baruch Hashem, this Mishnah seems to show you that it's not just Tzvi Hirshwein Reb who makes these mistakes, but people make these mistakes. They misspeak. Hamiskaven lomar truma. If a person has the intention to say the word truma, but by mistake he said the word maaser v'yomar maaser, or the opposite, maaser v'yomar truma. He wanted to say the word ma'aser, instead he said the word truma. Or let's move away from these matonos, these gifts which the farmer has to give, and look in the world of korbonos, of sacrifices. As we know, there are various types of sacrifices, but two of the most common ones are a korban ola, where I designate one of my cows, sheep, goats, to be a whole offering. The whole animal is offered upon the Mizbeach, upon the altar. And there's another type of korban called a shlomim, where I take one of those animals and I give it to the Beis HaMikdash, and it is treated as a sacrifice, some of which is consumed on the altar, on the Mizbeach, some of which is eaten by the Kohanim, some of which I get to eat. So there's an ola, there's a shlomim. Suppose I misspeak, and I mean to designate an animal to be an ola v'yomar shlomim, or shlomim v'yomar ola. Or to go to a different world, not the world of matonos, of gifts to a kohen or to a levi, and not the world of karbonos, of sacrifices, but the world of nidorim, of vows. Suppose I want never again to go into that old ramshackle house on the corner. And it's number 13 on Bedford Avenue. And instead of saying, I'm never going to go into 13 Bedford Avenue, I say, I'm never going to go into 30 Bedford Avenue. She'eni nichnas levai zeh v'yomar lo zeh. I said, verbally, forbidding upon myself a house, entering a house, which is not the house I meant to prohibit upon myself. Or, suppose I decide I don't like you anymore, Beryl Schmerl, and therefore I am not going to have any benefit from you, Beryl Schmerl. Instead of saying, She'eni nen en lozeh, I'm not going to have any benefit from this, Beryl Schmerl, I say, She'eni nen en lozeh, Yaichanon. Or I make another name, Shmerel Beryl, instead of Beryl Shmerel, V'yomar lo zeh. So I mean one thing and say something else, lo amaklum. That which I say means nothing, it's meaningless. We follow that which you said, that which you think in your heart, at least in the case of Truma and of Karbonos. What you say in your heart, that is what is matters. What you say verbally doesn't make a difference. Ad sheyihiyu piv v'libo shovin. We require that your mouth and your heart, your mental intent and your verbal expression be shovin, be one of the same. You meant truma and you said truma, it's truma. You meant truma and you said maaser, as we will see, it's truma. You meant Ola and said Shlomim, it's Ola. I'm saying this because when it comes to Truma and when it comes to Korbonos, even if you say nothing but only have the intent, the intention renders it Truma or the particular Korban. When it comes to Truma, we have a pasuk in Parshas Korach which reads, V'nechshav lochem trumaschem. V'nechshav means just thinking makes it Truma. B'machshova bilvad, just thinking it's Truma makes it Truma. So even if you said nothing, it would be Truma. And the same thing is true with Korbonos, just thinking in your mind, that cow over there, I'd like to make it a Korban Ola. And saying nothing, that cow would become a Korban Ola. Because the Pasuk says, Kol Nediv Lev Heviyu. And from there we see that Nediv Lev, the generosity of your heart, is what renders something sacred, even if you say nothing. However, when it comes to vows which are not sacred, like Truma, or like Kodeshim, like sacrifices, Korbonos, but a vow never to go into that old ramshackle house again, or never to go and have benefit to from Beryl Shmerel and his parties, there, what you say, think in your heart is nothing. You can think in your heart all sorts of angry words, and it means nothing until you say it. So when it comes to vows, you must say it and say it correctly. And if you just think in your heart, that's nothing. And if you think in your heart one thing and say another thing, that's nothing. It has to be what our Mishnah calls piv v'libo shovin. When it comes to vows, your mental intent must match what you say verbally, and then your verbal expression, your words, bind you. When it comes to truma and kodshim, it's not your words that bind you, it is your machshava, your mental intent, that binds you and that renders the grain truma or the animal a korban ola or a korban shlomim or whatever. The Mishnah continues in Perek Tes with a fascinating halacha. We already learned back in Mishnah Aleph that a goy, a non-Jew, cannot be an agent, cannot be my shliach. If I have a farm and I tell Peter the goy, Mr. Goy, please go and give Truma for me. No, a Goy cannot give Truma. However, suppose a Goy has his own farm in Eretz Yisrael, and he wants to give Truma. He's not obligated to, not a mitzvah for him, but he wants to. Or a Kusi. Now, a Kusi is a sect, Jewish people, who originated from Gentiles, and who converted and became Gerim. There's a question whether their conversion was sincere or insincere. But these Kusim went through various stages in their history. At one stage, they were Jews like all other Jews, and they had to be, as a true convert is, they're obligated in all mitzvos, etc. At a later stage in history, they were treated as goyim gemurim. They were treated as Gentiles. The question is raised by the Meforshei HaMishnah, specifically by a commentary learned called Mishneh Rishona, to try to understand how Kusi, the special group of Kusim, fits into this Mishnah. I will leave that for your own research and focus on the more common and actually still relevant today halacha of a goy, a nochri, a non-Jew, who has property, owns property in Eretz Yisrael, and who wants to designate his portion of his grain as truma or as masros. So the Mishnah says, Mishnah Tes, ha-nochri ve-ha-kusi, trumoson truma, the truma that a goy gives is truma. Is it truma mamosh min ha-Torah, or only a lesser type of truma? This is a discussion among the Rishonim. But just to translate the words, it would seem to mean it's truma, bona fide truma. Vehekdesh on hekdesh. If masroseh maser, his tithes are tithes, vehekdesh on hekdesh. And if a goy says, this sheep on my farm, my sheep, I am designated to be a sacrifice, to give as a sacrifice to the temple of the Jewish people in Jerusalem, that animal is a korban. Now, where do we know these things from? The Rambam writes a fascinating expression in his commentary on this Mishnah, which is Kedai. It's appropriate to look at it. The Rambam's commentary on Mishnayos is full of very interesting observations. I remember reading that the Rambam's commentary on the Mishnah, which was written in Arabic, was the first of his many works, which he wrote as a very, very young man. And that's why sometimes what he says in the Pirush HaMishnayos, his commentary on the Mishnah, is superseded by his later, more mature works. But the Rambam writes in his commentary in the Mishnah, quote, Hebrew translation of the Arabic, Hanochri mafal pisha enom chayovim b'mitzvos im osu mehem shum dovor yesh lohem kitzas sochor. If a goy does one of the mitzvos, even though he's not obligated to do so, he does receive a reward for it. It's not just playing games. He receives a reward for it. Since they get reward for it, what they do is valid. If he gives truma, it's truma. Another point I'd like to make is that there are those who say, Rashi says this various places in Shas, one is Maseches Gittin, Daf Chof Gimel Amud Beis, that our Mishnah is following the opinion which holds Ein kinyon lenochri be'eretz Yisrael lahafkia mitrumos umasros. That if a goy owns property in the land of Israel, that property remains obligated in trumos umasros. Just because it belongs to a goy, it still is obligated in trumos umasros. So therefore, we can understand that our Mishnah says, if the goy owns property in bona fide Eretz Yisrael, and he has crops, those crops are obligated in trumos umasros. And if the goy sets them aside, they're valid trumos umasros. A goy can also give a korban, can give a sacrifice in the temple. Kivesi beis tefila yikorei lechol ha'amim. Today that I'm recording this lecture is Asoro Bateves. And in Shul this morning in Slichos, we quoted that Pasuk, V'havayosim el harkochi, etc. My house, God says, my temple is a house l'chol ha'amim for all the nations of the world. And the Gemara teaches us in Maseches Chulin Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis that when the Torah tells us in Pashas Emor, Ish, Ish, mi beis Yisroel, etc., asher yakriv korbono, Ish, Ish, why did it say a man? Yes, a man, it means any man, even Goyim, can give Nedorim and Nedavos, can donate sacrifices to the temple the same as a Jewish person can. So this is the first statement in the Mishnah. Now, Rabbi Yehuda goes on to say, this is true, but a Goy is one thing that a Goy cannot effect, and that is what is called Kerem Ravai. Halacha of Kerem Ravai, we will learn more about it, but the basic halacha is this. If I have a farm, certainly a farm in Eretz Yisrael, actually a farm anywhere, as far as part of what I'm saying is concerned, but let's limit it to Eretz Yisrael for now. I have a farm in Eretz Yisrael, and I have trees that grow there, fig trees, date trees, that. And the first 3 years of those fruits, they're orla, and I'm not allowed to eat or have any pleasure from those growth of the first 3 years. However, the fourth year, then the fruit has the halacha of kerem ravai. Kerem ravai means I have to treat it in a way as I think way I would treat ma'aseh sheni. Namely, in that fourth year, I take all these dates, which I wasn't allowed to eat at all for the first 3 years, and the fourth year, pack them into my wagon, drive to Yerushalayim, and have a party with those dates in Yerushalayim. Or, if I don't want to schlep them all, I have 1,000 pounds of dates, I can exchange it for money, certain type of money, coins, and take those coins to Yerushalayim, and there I can purchase steak and wine and all sorts of fruits and have a big party, invite my friends. That's Kerem Ravai. Suppose a goy has a farm in Eretz Yisrael. So the first 3 years of a goy's tree, whether it's a goyish tree or a Jew's tree, arla is arla, and you can't use the fruits of a tree in its first 3 years. But in that fourth year, is the goy's crop also obligated in the mitzvah of Kerem Ravai? Rav Yehuda says no. Ein la nochri Kerem Ravai. The Chachomim omrim yeshlo. The Chachomim say it does have a halacha of Kerem Ravai. Interestingly, in the Tosefta of Meseches Trumos, which is kind of a supplement to Mishnayos Trumos, it says that Rabbi Yehuda agrees with the Chachamim that a goy's fourth year crops in bona fide Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, Beis Lechem, Tzfas, that's Kerem Ravai, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda just says, what about Surya? The Jews annex a little piece of southern Syria, and the goy has a farm in suburban Damascus, then there's no din of Kerem Ravai for the goy's fourth year crops. Whereas for a Jews, there would be a din of Kerem Ravai. Trumas hanochri medama'as v'chayovim oleho chomesh. This Mishnah seems to imply, and again this is a debate, but it seems to imply in simple words, that the truma which a goy gives is full-fledged truma. And if one gallon of the wine which the goy set aside as truma becomes mixed with 50 gallons of non-truma wine, all of it is medamas. It's all meduma. And I, a non-kohen, cannot drink any of it. I've got to give it all to the kohen. Let him give me money to pay for the 50 wine gallons of wine which are not truma, and he keeps the wine which is the gallon of wine which is truma. It's midamas, it's demua, unless the guy set aside a gallon of wine and it fell into a mixture of 100 or more gallons of non-truma, then the mixture is not demua. But you need that proportion of 100 to 1. V'chayovim oleha chomesh. Normally, if I, a non-Kohen, mistakenly eat the Kohen's truma, I have to give the Kohen whatever the value of that truma was, plus 1/5. Same is true for a guy's truma. You gotta pay for it, the keren and the chomesh. So it would seem it's bona fide truma. But Rabbi Shimon poter. Rabbi Shimon disagrees. And the explanation is given that although Rabbi Shimon agrees that the truma of a goy is midama'as, meaning requires a proportion of 100 against 1 in order to become botel, in order to become null, but he only disagrees about the chomesh. You don't have to pay the additional 1/5. That's how some Meforshim understand it. The Yerushalmi quotes a braisa in which Rabbi Shimon disagrees entirely and says that the truma of a nochri is not midama'as, and it does not require the payment of a chomesh, because from this point of view, the truma of a nochri, of a goy, is simply not bona fide, legitimate truma. It has a lesser degree of stringency. It's not, maybe it's the rabbonon. It's less of a kedusha, and therefore it's not midama'as, and you're not chayiv to pay the chomesh. So we have finished Mishnah Tes of Perek Gimel, and with that we have finished Perek Gimel. We finished the third Perek of Trumos. We finished lesson number 13.